Hi, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on where you are, and welcome to Capital Link Shipping Sector Webinar Series. I'm lucky enough to host this next panel, which is going to be on product tankers. We have, not surprisingly, given Capital Link's reputation, we have a great group of people with us on this panel today. The group includes Carlos Balestra de Metella, who is the CEO of D'Amico. We got Soren Steenberg Jensen, head of asset management at Hafnia. We of course have Robert Bugbee, who's the president of Scorpio Tankers, and Kim Ballett, who's the CFO at TORM. This webinar is going to be a roundtable discussion. We have a Q&A chat. If anyone has anything and that they want me to try to work into the conversation, I'll do my best to do that. So please don't be shy if you have any questions. Just to remember, the focus is on product tankers, not other sectors across shipping. And frankly, we're very excited to host this today just because there's a lot going on in the product tanker market currently. We're in December, which is historically one of the strongest months of the year for products, and the sector of the market, however you want to view it, is not falling short. I was talking to the gentleman before we started, with MR rates in the Pacific and the Atlantic over $30,000, these companies are making money today, and that's important. So with that, I guess we'll start the discussion. Carlos, why don't you kick it off? I'd be interested to hear, before we kind of dive into what's going to be driving the market over the next 6, 12, 18 months, maybe if you could kind of give us the current state of play and what you're seeing in terms of where the market is, today.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I mean, as you pointed out correctly, I mean, we are in an extremely strong market. Personally, I wouldn't have anticipated us to be in such a strong market at the end of 2025. But there were many factors, geopolitical in nature, I would say, many of them, which were hard to forecast, but which did play into our favor. And I think one of the biggest contributing factors to today's market strength, I would say, is the big increase in oil on water. I personally would have guessed that the crude tankers would be doing well. And that is indeed happening. But that, of course, then is translating big time also to the product tanker. So the transmission mechanisms between the crude and the product markets are well known. Well, in the first place, of course, we are not having as many vessels non-coated cleaning up to transport product tankers. More importantly, what we are seeing, I think, which is maybe the main driver of today's strength in the markets, is a number of LR2s which are dirtying up. So I was quite impressed to see this statistic. I checked what happened to the LR2 clean trading fleet since October 22, and it actually contracted. So over the last 3 and a bit years, despite a number of LR2s being delivered, the new buildings into the market, we have a contraction of 10 vessels. Now we only have 240, more or less, LR2s trading clean. We had around 250 in October 22. And we have had a huge increase in the number of LR2s trading dirty. Now we have 290 trading dirty, so we have more trading dirty than clean. And that has contracted the clean fleet for the transportation of CPP products, and has tightened the market substantially, and has been one of the main drivers. Of course, together with the big surge in oil that we saw this year in oil production, which was also a very important contributor to the strength in the market. We have seen average oil production this year is around 3 million barrels more than the previous year. But the increase between Q1 and Q4 is even more pronounced. There's a ramp up in production of almost 5 million barrels, which happened this year because of the sharp unwinding of cuts by OPEC, but also because of a lot of non-OPEC production which came to the market. And a lot of that in the Americas, so contributing to positively to ton miles. So that tightened the crude tanker market, and of course created this environment whereby it became very attractive for LR2s to dirty up, tightening the balances that we were referring to previously for the CPP trading vessels. I mean, I will stop here because there are many other things I could talk about, but I think all the other panelists maybe want to comment and have other things to say. So it was a very
No, hey
dialogue.
Carlos, that was great. That was great, man. I mean, you definitely have, I feel like it's funny. I think you basically kind of addressed a lot of things that I was hoping to kind of unpack on this call. So that I think that was a great intro. And to that point, Kim, Carlos mentioned, kind of talked about oil on the water. It's funny, me, I might, many of us on this call are sitting at our Bloomberg terminals and we're hearing more about oil on the water, I feel like, in the last couple months than I have in, over 10 years of covering the sector. I guess kind of curious what you're seeing in terms of that, maybe what's driving that. Kind of talk about oil in the water. And then Kim also, I was kind of hoping is part of that, and maybe you'll address it, is, we've been hearing maybe vessel speeds maybe are a little slower, which is also keeping some of that oil in the water. So if you talk to that, Kim, that would, I think, be super helpful to the audience.
I think Carlos basically summed a lot of the things up with the rewinding of the OPEC plus cuts that really increased production and even more oil on the water. And just the way I conclude on, I would not say more than what Carlos said, but the way at least I concluded is that if you take October, November, where you had the maintenance season, the average also the ton mile from there and comparing to we compared to 2023 averages was zero basically. So you can say the basic fundamental drivers in product tank didn't really do anything for the market in that period. It will ramp up now, as you also said, we are in that season, meaning that it is basically to a large extent the crude tanker market that has driven the upside that we have seen so far. So you could expect potentially more to come because the fundamentals of our industry has not yet not yet really unpacked seasonality wise. And then I think in general this is a year where we did expect we could see there would be a lot of new buildings entering the market. That spree of new buildings entering the market, I think many of us were curious to see if it really was originally crude tanker owners that had ordered them, so they would trade crude. Carlos said it. We see the same data that if you compare just from the beginning of the year until now. Net trading of LR2s trading CPP are basically flat, but we have plus 50 new builds entered the market. So I think, of course, the crude did it, but I also think that to a large extent, the ones who ordered the LR2s were originally crude tanker owners. So it should just cement a very interesting market. And then on top of that, you have the whole sanction of especially Aframaxes. You talk about oil on the water, and yes, the inefficiency of the whole dark fleet being there, where when they are sanctioned, the efficiency of those vessels dramatically drop, and especially when they are OFAC sanctions, they drop significantly. So that sort of also takes supply out of the market, that market. And I think it's a combination of those things. That have has driven a lot of the market development we've seen this year, and and then it's up for seasonality in the coming period.
Okay, great. Now that was super helpful, Kim. Thanks. Hey, Robert, I was hoping you could talk a little bit about, one of the things that people seem to be concerned about around the LR2 fleet is kind of this pickup and ordering. I mean, when Scorpio embarked on LR2s, the growth rates were of the fleet were large. But it was really ahead of refinery expansions and refinery buildouts in the Middle East, which needed these vessels. And so I'm kind of curious, as you see the LR2 fleet evolving, knowing that, I don't know, I mean, I kind of like if, realizing this isn't a discussion on crude, but like if I'm ordering a crude Suezmax, I don't know, for an extra $2 million, I don't maybe know why I wouldn't code it just for the optionality when I'm ordering a $100 million piece of equipment. But I'm kind of curious, as you kind of, think about Scorpio, and its position in the LR2 market, just kind of managing, some of that flying. I think Kim mentioned, a lot of this stuff seems like it's trading crude. Kind of how you're thinking about the LR2 fleet, just because, as we think about it, I mean, you could make a case Aframax as a whole or net fleet growth 0 to negative. But kind of just curious on your views.
I think you have to look at them in a combined sense. So, we're seeing, we're actually seeing the evidence that many LR2s actually don't carry product at all. They just go straight into crude. Their owners prefer it that way. And it's changed to a more, a more broader story. We, product has outperformed crude tremendously. Up until quite recently, for the last 3, 4 years, based off the thesis that growth would take place in tanker trade more in products than in crude because of the refinery changes. And that's happening. That theme will still continue. But crude now is starting to have its time, thankfully, because, we've seen that it is possible to have a weak crude oil market and a strong product tanker market. But in the history of shipping, you've never had a strong crude market without having a strong product market.
No,
And
that.
that just makes common sense, as Kim was pointing out. So I think that's quite exciting for the LR2 market, that the LR2 market has finally sort of got the roof over its head taken away, or the fear of the market with the crude market developing. And there are plenty of development in places that require Aframaxes or Suezmaxes, and the VLCC market is much more supportive going forward as well.
No, that's great. And we do a lot to cover today. And we're going to talk about sanctions and all these other things. But a lot fortunately or unfortunately in shipping, a lot of things are less predictable than others. But Soren, as I kind of from your seat, at the end of the day, what we think about is, refinery production in different pockets of the world and refinery closures and kind of balancing that refinery global fi refinery complex. So I'd be kind of curious, Soren, as you kind of see some of these pockets of strength in the market, kind of if you could give us maybe a brief overview of what's happening in the refinery complex and maybe what we should be thinking about in the next 12 to 18 months, how that could maybe impact, ton miles and really the overall outlook for product.
Yeah, absolutely. And as both Carlos and Kim alluded to, we had a lot of refinery maintenance that helped with the strength that we have right now. But also more structurally, we saw that the refinery in Immingham it went into Chapter 11. We have a refinery in Germany that's closed. We have a refinery in Scotland that's closed. So whereas still next year, we are seeing probably to the tune of 800, 850,000 barrels of new refining capacity coming online in the Far East. So I think we are continuing it down what Robert also said, which is basically that crude will move. less in theory, and product tankers will absorb that additional sailing distance. So nothing has changed there. Reality is that in the sort of mature, I would say, big cities in Europe, where we have these old refineries that are 60, 70, 80 years old, you're just not going to expand or modernize them. It doesn't make sense. Now there's talk about also that in Nigeria that that refinery should be doubled in size. So that's just more fueling that story in general for more ton mile on the product tanker side as well.
No, that's great. And it's interesting just to kind of piggyback on that. I guess more recently, China announced that they're going to increase their import quotas of crude. Kim, I'd be curious, kind of on your thoughts around, how you kind of square those, China importing more, and hey, they're going to consume some of that on their shores, but I imagine some of that, could actually hit the water for exports. Kind of like Kim, as you kind of, China is clearly, has maybe not as important as it was 5, 10 years ago in terms of their mega growth. But as you think about some of these expansions, and maybe you broaden it out, Kim, beyond just China, but as you think about some of these expansions in Southeast Asia, how you're thinking about that impact, and really, like, what do you think that could do to ton miles here, over the next 2 years?
I think I will first of all support what Søren said, that we believe it's predominantly, if you take Northwestern Europe, the closures there, if you take West Coast US, where you also see two closures coming out now. So I think if you take the way we think about West Coast US is okay in general. Politicians probably do this for both the signaling and the policies around it, but the demand is still there, so you just need to import more. So if you take those sorts of markets, that supports ton mile demand. And if you take China is not a big importer export of products. They are of crude, but not of products. I think if you combine it, it's around 5% of global trade, so it doesn't really impact us that much. Of course, I think you are alluding to, but what if they import more, they refine it, and then they export it? We don't really factor that in when we predict future freight rates. But if it were like that, that would be supportive. So if we see it as anything, it would be supportive. But just the whole sort of change also in green transition in China, not the biggest effect for products. But if there's something in the lines of what you're saying, it would be supportive.
Yeah, and that's interesting. You mentioned California. I mean, after shutting down refineries now, it seems like the state's trying to incentivize them to kind of restart some of this stuff. Hey, disruptions are great for everyone on this panel. So let's see what happens. But it looks like you could have a little mini trade there happening, probably sooner rather than later. I did also want to talk about, sanctions, and we're getting questions from the audience around this. Robert, I'd be curious. There's lots of ebbs and flows around peace deal with Ukraine, Russia. Whether that's going to happen, at least on from where we sit, is a big TBD, which is to be determined for those of you not familiar with that. But just kind of curious, if maybe you could set some scenarios and how you're thinking about that, and maybe, and maybe to piggyback that on, because part of this is to help maybe some investors here make some money, is how you're thinking about positioning the fleet, ahead of potential any changes in sanctions over the next year.
Great. I mean, I appreciate the really easy question. I think first of all, one thing that if we look at the probability at the moment is that, The person who's tried the peace broker, as it were, the United States here, is itself saying, look, we would have to see a staggered, measured lifting of sanctions. So nothing is going to happen to change the present trade routes soon. The second thing is that it's, you're going to have to get it done real quick, I think, or not at all, because, obviously Putin, this situation has created a big difference between Europe and the United States. Europe has now, I think, in recent days, have been galvanized. No one has managed to bring Europe together on a subject, any subject, better than Trump has done in the last 5, 6 days. And Europe is working 24 hours a day, which is extraordinary in Europe in the first place, to try and find a way to release the plus $100 billion to Ukraine for their choice, either to buy arms to continue the war or to offer peace. And if that happens, that will strengthen Ukraine's position combined with the winter. Traditionally, it's been very hard to play offense in winter in that part of the world. So that either way, the one thing we know is nothing is changing for a while. If we, that everyone's playing with different currencies, I don't think that Putin is that interested in, business development with the United States as a priority. I think he's interested in territory. He's been quite clear: territory and people and language, and that's the currency that Ukraine is trading into. So I think we're still a while away from having any change in actual trade routes. When we go forward, the longer that that change takes, the even older the fleet that's serving Russia exports is going to be. And that means that even if you can find a way for that fleet to come back, so even after they have sanctions are lifted on the individual vessels or the individual companies, that the ships have actually gone through dry dockings, have got their vettings from the Western world, or the developed world or non-Russian world counterparties, so they're able to trade in the rest of the world, then you'll have less ships available just simply on age. So I think that the fear of even if there is a if someone could show that the correlation is as simple as, oh, rates went up at the beginning of war, so the rates will come down at the end of the war, which I don't really buy into now, that it will take t time for any effect, that correlation or negative sense to occur. And in many ways, if we look at the stocks, look at the earnings of these companies, look at the values. Values have gone up, earnings have gone up, time charters have gone up. I mean, we did a 5-year time charter to a major oil company, days ago on an LR2. I mean, there's not many 5-year charters are being done, and we would assume that that charterer has a reasonable line of sight. That, the stocks seem to be discounting a lot of it already. I mean, they're not trading anywhere near where they should be on their cash terms. And one major thing is the stocks are different. Every single one of the public companies are different. It's not about Scorpio or Hafnia or TORM. Every one are well capitalized right now for the first time in the industry.
Yeah, now Robert, you bring up a good point, and it's interesting. We could talk macro for the next 2 hours, but you know what? We do need to kind of talk about stocks as well, and just judging on some of the answers, and this, Carlos, maybe if you could talk a little bit about this. But you know, it's kind of for, you know, and Robert, you kind of addressed that, you know, one of the questions that, you know, the audience is asking is about, hey, you just announced your, you kind of talked about that 5-year charter. Some people are asking about using FFAs. What I would just tell the audience is, you know, whether it's a time charter or an FFA, you know, they're kind of, they get you to the same place, which is fixing in rates at pretty attractive prices right here. But just kind of curious, Carlos, you know, as you think about where we are in the market and kind of maybe what's interesting is if you could talk a little bit about the depth of the time charter market, because sometimes, you know, somebody might see a broker report and say, wow, there's this 3-year rate. But what you'll find out is, you know, the other side of that contract maybe isn't there at that price. So, you know, Carlos, kind of if you could talk a little bit about what you're seeing in the market and at least how you're thinking about positioning your fleet, just given the fact that rates are pretty strong and we are seeing an, you know, I guess the back end of the time charter curve start to move a little bit higher.
Yeah, no, it is true what Robert just mentioned, that it's not easy to find the 5-year contract. So the fact that, I mean, I don't know the specifics of this contract he's referring to, but the fact that someone is there to do such long contracts, a good counterparty at what I imagine is a very profitable rate is an indicator of the strength of the market's fundamentals. We personally, as D'Amico, which by the way, we are also very well capitalized. We have been exploring this market, and we have closed some TC contracts at very good rates recently for 2 years. We recently announced 2 deals for 2 years on an MR2 and on an MR1. Yeah, we are very happy with this additional coverage we took at very profitable rates, and there are more opportunities there. There is a lot of interest today by good counterparties to take vessel on time charter and also for long periods, let's say 2, 3 years. So we will explore. We are already 42% covered for next year at just over $23,000 per day. Our P&L breakeven is not far from 15,000. That is a good rate. And we have been covering mostly our handy fleet. So we have been keeping our MR2s and our LR1s mostly on the spot market. So that should also help our performance next year. And in the following years. So the rates are going up, the period rates are going up. Of course, the 1-year rates move faster, but also the longer rates are starting to move in the right direction.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, just thinking about the fact that we're already booking some days into 2026 to see where we are right now and MRs over 30,000. I mean, yeah, I think some of these let's just say I know our estimates for the year are going to have to be coming up for 26. Soren, you know, an another question I kind of had around, you know, the overall market and, you know, at the end of the day, stocks, you know, lot stocks are driven by lots of things, right? They're driven by the fundamentals. You know, we aren't the biggest proponents of net asset value, but you know, some investors are. You know, I'd be kind of curious, Soren, what you're seeing in the you know, in terms of the S&P market, realizing, you know, maybe we're not seeing a lot of transactions, but the ones that we are seeing, you maybe talk a little bit about those. And then I'd also be curious around, you know, what we're seeing in terms of new build prices. We're hearing shipyards are selling out, if not sold out, for the next couple of years. Just kind of if you could talk to a little bit about that, because you know, clearly that's gonna, you know, a tight supply market is obviously gonna be only supportive of rates, time charters, and probably the stocks as well.
Absolutely, Greg, if we start from in reverse, the new building yards, they are right now selling out fast of 2029. 2028 is for all practical purposes on tier one shipyards covered. 2029, some are now saying second half. One yard in China is saying, well, 2030 now. So there's and this is not driven by tankers. I mean, there's a massive influx of orders on the container vessels. I think the container vessels are going through a little bit. It's not age driven per se, as in those ships are getting really old, but it's a little bit like in the airline industry that, even a 10-year-old container ship is consuming so much more fuel, and the unit price for them is sensitive. So, and the customers, they're facing direct. So right now they're really pushing in a lot of orders on this, obviously on gas, and there's been a huge influx. So, and probably thankfully, because owners, product tanker owners, when they make a lot of money, they have a tendency to order ships. So maybe not too bad that we can't order for immediate delivery. Prices, yeah, MRs, 49, 49 and a half, 50, depending on what you want to do in Korea, around 45 in China. Strong prices, and that of course means that if people are not able to, order a new build and get it within a reasonable time, then that trickles down to the secondhand market. What is the options then? Are there resales? No, not really, because many people are enjoying the strong market on their vessels, and that means that we are seeing transactions. We're seeing transactions at beefy numbers. Of course, if you get a vessel tomorrow and you're able to get out into the strong performing freight market, people pay a premium. We have a couple of people on this call who have recently transacted together. So the prices are firm, and also secondhand prices are moving up. We're probably seeing sort of a 5% uptick over the last quarter or two. All depending on age group and yard build and so on. So it is very strong, and it means also that it is actually quite difficult to build cases for new builds. We are not at historic highs, but we are definitely at one of the most second highest level we have seen for a while. It just means that the incremental new build you get out there, of course, has a high cash flow break even simply because of the price. But it also means that I think that especially on the product tankers, we are a little bit between a rock and a hard place, because we're seeing the fleet aging increase incredibly fast. When we get to 28, we are actually very short of new builds to maintain status quo when we come to 28. So yes, we have quite a lot of more ships delivering next year and in 27, but we are very short in 28, and with shipyards now already having order books full to 29, if we're waiting, what are we waiting for? Will we again see an MR being priced at, $35 million? Most likely not. So it is an interesting case to work with, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's interesting, right? Because it does seem like, and people have mentioned it, it's interesting. Vessels are aging out of the conventional fleet, and now it almost even seems like we're potentially seeing some vessels age out of the sanctioned fleet, where I had heard some sanctioned vessels were looking to head to a scrap yard, and it was they were finding a difficult place that would accept the vessel to be scrapped because of a sanction. Kim, I guess I'd kind of be curious, as you kind of see the market and what you're thinking about the sanctioned fleet, any kind of quantitative or qualitative numbers you can throw at us in terms of how much of the market's out there, maybe how we should be thinking about those vessels, or is there actually, if this continues to drag on, could we actually see a renewal of the sanctioned fleet? I know that's something that people have been talking about, which is just gonna, further tight, keep, maybe not further tighten because the market is tight and rates are good, but at least keep things tighter for longer.
I think it has always it already been addressed a bit, right? That if you take the Aframaxes and the LR2s, that combination is heavily sanctioned. Over one third of, or sort of fourth of them, are already sanctioned. I think it's 27% of that combination is sanctioned either by UK, EU, or OFAC. And as I said before, they are then trading extremely inefficient following that. And the way we think about it, at least, is that sort of the predominant part of that fleet is above 20 years of age. So it will just and as this drag along, I think Robert made a conclusion on that this the whole situation around Russia, Ukraine, and especially the sanctions doesn't seem to be solved shortly. So they are just increasingly going to be worn out, and we do not believe that as they're getting older that they will return to the conventional fleet. So I think we are in this special situation that as the general fleet age just increases due to the nature of both the sanctioning and when we as so I said when we get to 28, there could potentially be a net negative fleet growth just by the sheer amount of scrapping versus new ordering. We are in a situation where it seems a bit tight on the supply side going forward. So we just don't see that, and older vessels going back to the conventional fleet. I think that's an important factor to factor into it. So a vessel that has traded inefficiently for X amounts of year, would you really retrofit it, bring it up to normal standards, whatever, in 18, 19, 20, it doesn't really make sense. I think you will probably just have specific smaller routes or take it to scrap after that.
Yeah, no doubt. For that to happen, clearly the market would have, I mean, it's strong, but it would have to be a lot stronger for longer with, a lot more 5-year time charters out there to probably justify that investment. Unfortunately, we're kind of again, kind of, wow, we've gone chewed through a lot of the time on this call. So I did want, like I said, these are, you guys are all working at public companies. This is about making people on this call money. Robert, clearly, rates are going to do what rates are going to do, and everyone on this panel is going to benefit from a strong rate environment and have a little bit less cash in a weak rate environment. But kind of curious, at least as you think about Scorpio, and you've done a lot over the last couple of years to kind of get the balance sheet, it seems like where you want it to be. If you kind of talk to a little bit about shareholder returns, I mean, I believe last quarter, you kind of started grinding the dividend a little bit higher, which was good to see. Just kind of curious, as you think about, as we sit here and, I mean, wow, we're almost at Christmas 2025, how you're thinking about, help benefiting shareholders through, as this market continues to just chug along.
I think we would look to continue to. We want to play a regular conventional dividend, and we want to be able to, raise that dividend through time and through the cycle. That's the, the key part of it. I think that we've got the balance sheet to pretty much exactly where we want it. That's a great place. And the market's an interesting one. I just wanted to say one thing about, try and make it simple to you guys, is that, and the LR2 that was fixed on the 5 years was worth about $50 to $53 million, depending on what day of the week it is. It's earning in free cash flow about $22,000 a day. So that is seven. Over $7 million a year. Very near 7.5 million if you, forget about the cost of money. That is a massive unleveraged return. And the stocks, now whether that's Hafnia, whether it's Hafnia own that dynamic, whether it's TORM who own that dynamic, or whether it's us, all of the companies are trading below NAV. So the actual shareholder is getting a far higher cash unleveraged return through the stock because it's discounted to that value of 50, 53 than is there. And that is, really extraordinary. And that's sort of what the market is doing, a market bid to a market chip. It's nothing different for any of the companies.
Yeah, now that's super helpful, Robert. Carlos, I'd be kind of curious how you're thinking about it. Just given, what you've been able to do with D'Amico over the, through this ongoing upcycle.
Yeah, we are. I think, as Robert mentioned, all the companies are in very similar positions from a financial perspective. We all have great balance sheets, and the deleveraging continues, even though it is not anymore, I would say, a priority. We did order four LR1s last year that would be delivered to us in 27. And so we have still 190 million in investments to take delivery of these vessels. And we have paid dividends. I would say, it's arguable whether they are generous or not. Of course, there are some product tanker companies which are paying much more than us. But we had a payout ratio out of 24 results of 40%. And we don't have a specific dividend policy, but what we can have been guiding our investors most more recently is that out of 25 results, we also expect to pay a similar payout ratio of around 40% in terms of dividends. We paid, let's say, an advance on this dividend, an interim dividend in November, and then we will be announcing the final dividend next year, which will be distributed around April, May. And yeah, we don't have quarterly dividends, but I mean, that's basically our, although we don't have a policy, we evaluate the market and our priorities as we go, because opportunities can arise for investments, market conditions can change. But of course, if things stay as they are, we do expect to continue being able to pay quite a lot of dividends to our shareholders in the coming years.
Yeah, no, it absolutely. I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons people want to own tankers during these cycles in the market, simply because, we've done some analysis. If you look at like an S&P return over multi-decades, 40, 50 years, you find out half of your returns generated from dividends. So, buybacks help also. But, just to that point, Kim, and you know what, yeah, Kim, I'm kind of curious how you're th you know how TORM's thinking about, shareholder returns, and then Soren, once Kim's done, I'd love for you to finish up on kind of Hafnia and, its high dividend payout. Go ahead, Kim.
Okay, we have a dividend policy, and we've had that for many years. We changed this during 2022, where we could see the markets significantly changed. So just saying it easily, and then I'll try to transform it into a payout ratio. We basically have a minimum liquidity of $1.8 million per vessel. So not right now we have 92. You just times 92, 1.8. That's our minimum. So that creates security certainty that we are far away from any financial covenants, even in the worst case scenario you can ever imagine we've ever seen in this market. So that's just for safety reason. But then, as we did that, we say everything we generate of free cash any given quarter, we pay that out as a cash dividend. That's at least what we as management suggest to our board, and then the board decides. But they have basically done that ever since. And then on top of that, if we divest a vessel, those proceeds, we put them into you can call it a strategic account we will use for whatever purposes, acquisition purposes going forward. So that what I said about paying out the free cash we generate quarter by quarter, that sort of equivalent to a level of around 75 ish of payout ratio. So a significant portion are basically just being paid out of our PBT is being paid out to our investors. So we are super keen on giving, of course, daily operations. We need to be try to be the best performing company in the market, increasing our shareholder or value of our company, hence increasing our shareholder value as such, and then pay out basically all the dividends from the cash we generate on quarter by quarter. So that's our general policy, and then maintaining a conservative capital structure. We are not at the level where Robert is right now, or Scorpio, but hovering around the 25 net LTV level.
Yeah, and from our sake in Hafnia, we have a very clear and well communicated distribution policy, dividend policy. So our policy is linked to our net LTV. So in the case where we are right now, between 20 to 30% net LTV, we pay out 80%. If we go below 20%, it becomes 90%. Right now, we are just above the 20% for Q3, and we have we find that this is a very clear way to communicate and create the right expectation for our shareholders, and we have paid dividend consistently in the 15 last quarters. And in 2024, we paid out $1.16 per share in dividend. So this is our table, and we've followed that, and I believe it's been very well received by our shareholders.
No doubt. It's clearly, it looks like, just given the market and as we head into 26 with days already be booking, and it seems like cash flows, at least in the medium term, are looking strong. Let me see here from the audience. We're not going to talk about that. I mean, I guess just as we think about this, let's see here. Carlos, maybe just since I see you on, I'd be kind of curious, as you think about opportunities. One of the questions we're getting about is, just given the rise up in asset prices, realizing that, you do have some vessels that you're taking delivery of, are there any kind of tea leaves people should be reading if, say, you were to go out and sell a vessel or two? Kind of walk us through that, just because I think it's something that, as companies manage their fleets, hey, despite how strong you might think the market is, sometimes it just makes sense to kind of, I guess maybe high grade the fleet. Kind of just curious on your views around that.
Yeah, no, thanks for the question. And I think we touched a bit on upon this during the call, and the difficulty that which is actually positive for the market, that we are facing now in making new investment decisions, because of course prices are not cheap. We have a young fleet, average age around 9.7 years. But quarter by quarter, the fleet does age, and we had a few older vessels in our fleet, built in 2011, 2010, four vessels that we sold in the last 2 years, three of which we sold this year, two delivered to the new buyers actually this month. And these vessels are going to be replaced by the four LR1s we ordered. So we do have still two vessels in our fleet which are non-eco vessels, and we might be selling them in the not too distant future, and possibly replacing them with younger, more efficient vessels. So we are not now in a position where we are looking to expand our fleet, but a fleet renewal whereby we do sell some older vessels and then maybe we buy, replace, substitute them with some younger vessels is something we can look at. And we will do it gradually in the next few years.
Yeah, that was super helpful, Carlos. Thank you for that. And you know what? Just looking at a lot of the questions, I'm going to spare all of you. There's lots of questions around M&A, There's lots of questions around the crude oil market, and kind of potential strategies. But with that, everybody, I just want to thank you all for dialing in today. I hope you found it informative. If anybody in the audience would like to connect to either Kim, Soren, Robert, or Carlos, please reach out to Capital Link, and the team over there will be more than happy to set up some time for you to follow up with these companies. Gentlemen, thank you all very much. And hey, if I don't talk to you, have a great Christmas.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you,
Thanks
Greg.
for having us.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Likewise.